Been elected mayor of his class in Vancouver. So he's starting his politics young.
Yeah, this is the worst president we've had in...
In your lifetime.
In my lifetime, so...
And in your 93-year-old grandpa's lifetime.
So just...
It's the worst timeline.
We're going to get through it together. We'll get through it together.
You've been listening to sounds from this weekend's No Kings protests around the Portland metro area. We heard interviews with demonstrators in Portland, Woodburn, and Milwaukee. Thank you to all the KBOO reporters who contributed to this episode. That's Hannah Francis, Gian Guanta, Anna Wilcox, Lizak Shalit, and Lori W. I'm Althea Billings for KBOO News In Depth.
Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Energy Trust of Oregon, empowering businesses throughout the region with energy-efficient solutions that can help to improve the comfort, safety, and productivity of businesses. More info at energytrust.org. Energy Trust of Oregon.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host this evening. Our topic is PSU adjuncts ready to strike. My guests are Erica Thomas, an instructor in the University Studies Department and co-chair and chair of communications for the Portland State University Faculty Association, PSUFA, and Vasiliki Tuhuliotis, a teacher in the Honors College and co-chair and chair of the bargaining for PSUFA. Thank you both for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thanks, Jamie.
PSUFA represents about 1,200 part-time instructors who make up almost half of all instructors at PSU. Many PSU adjuncts also teach at other local universities and community colleges, including Portland Community College, which is now on strike.
I feel like actually I want to just, because I imagine that a lot of your listeners might not have been familiar with the word adjunct, the term adjunct, prior to now. So I feel like it would also just be like a good moment to insert that. It also means like slightly different things at different universities, but at PSU and at most places, most higher education institutions, an adjunct is what's referred to as like a casualized employee, there's like all different kinds of terminologies for these employees who are hired contract based, term to term, or course by course. In some instances, like at PSU, you can apply, you can sort of be reviewed and get a longer contract than that. We have up to 2-year contracts for adjuncts, which can give people slightly more job security at PSU. But essentially, an adjunct is a part-time, less than half-time, researcher or teacher who is hired on a course-by-course, term-by-term basis.
Your unions are subject to some pretty complex laws. And for our listeners who may not be aware, unlike private sector workers whose union management negotiations are determined by the National Labor Relations Act of 1935 and are overseen by the National Labor Relations Board, except for agricultural and domestic workers who do not have the right to unionize or strike, public employees' collective bargaining in Oregon is determined by the Public Employees' Collective Bargaining Act, overseen by the Employee Relations Board. Each state has its own public sector union laws, and public sector unions are not legal in some states, and public sector unions cannot legally strike in some states. Oregon legalized collective bargaining and the right to strike for state, city, county, school, and other public employees in 1973 after a wave of illegal strikes. The PECBA has very restrictive methods and timelines for collective bargaining, established, of course, to dampen strikes and other workplace disruptions. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of your negotiations, tell our listeners how PECBA bargaining works.
The two parties have to be in what's called direct negotiations for 150 days before either party can call for mediation. Once a party calls for mediation, you have to be in mediation for a minimum of 15 days. And after that 15-day threshold, then either party can call for what is called impasse. and at that point, the parties go into what's called a 30-day cooling off period. Then they can exchange last, best, and final offers. And 7 days after that, the union can strike or the employer can implement a contract. So in terms of where PSUFA is, and again, that's the Portland State University Faculty Association, adjunct faculty union, we actually reached 150 days of direct bargaining with the university in July, and then our union called for mediation in February, and our first scheduled mediation session is on April 8th. So we have called for mediation, but mediation has not yet been scheduled, and we have been bargaining for over a year. We started in February 14th of 2025.
Wow. Long time. What is PSUFA's bargaining platform? And give our listeners a sense of what are the main sticking points in your negotiations for a labor agreement with the college administration.
One of the main sticking points or one of the main bargaining platforms that we have is job security. And we know that this is a thing that adjuncts feel a lot of economic pressure because of the how their work is. They are temps. And they are often working at multiple institutions. So we actually share a lot of our members of our bargaining unit, our members of PCC, FFAP, you know, working part-time at multiple institutions, sometimes three institutions even. I, for instance, work at two universities at the same time right now. Job security is one of the major bargaining platforms and priorities that our members have. And the other two at the highest level, the other two that we are fighting the hardest for are pay, fair pay, and what's referred to as academic freedom, or the freedom to teach and research. And what that means for teachers and researchers at higher education institutions is that they can't be sort of punished for reprimanded for engaging in political speech that's protected in the classroom. It's further sort of protections for people to research subject matter, for students also to research and present on subject matter in the classroom, and for the faculty member to give space for whatever those subject matters are that the students are interested in. So it's not just something that we're fighting for the teachers. It's also something that's super important to being able to maintain a classroom in which dialogue is able to be had about, you know, political subject matter that can be protected by our contract. Vasiliki, do you want to add?
Yeah, I just want to say that one thing that's important to know about academic freedom is that it is considered a sort of professional right for faculty members, and it does extend to students. And we currently have language in the collective bargaining agreement on academic freedom, but it's not actually subject to grievances. And so we're in a big fight with the university right now to allow that, to allow language on academic freedom to be grievable. And they're really pushing up against that. So I just want to sort of reiterate again the three kind of, I think, most important pieces of the bargaining platform. to kind of sum up what Erica said and then also connect to some broader kind of historical themes around adjuncts. So as Erica said, we're fighting for fair pay, which, you know, for PSU adjuncts, that means equal pay for equal work, right? We have historically been paid less than the full-time faculty is to do the same quality of work. So we've actually tied our economic proposals to the salary rates for senior instructors, full-time faculty senior instructors. Then, as Erica said, job security, trying to like mitigate the worst effects of being sort of term-to-term contracted faculty members, and then academic freedom. I just want to say that, you know, adjuncts have served a really important role in the neoliberal university because we are cheap, we are easily disposable, and we are easily repressible. And we were created to be that way. And so in our fighting for these things, which are very important to our members and the priorities come out of surveys, but we're also really fighting for a necessary change in the working conditions of what is over half of faculty across this country. We believe that you can't offer a quality education for your students when your faculty is cheap, disposable, and repressible.
All right, so we're facing now what PSU president announced that the university would have to go through major restructuring, eliminating as many as 19 departments. And of course, this move on the part of the administration impacts all workers at the university, not just adjunct faculty, but all the 7 different unionized workers. And it mirrors the austerity program of universities across the state and the nation. The PCC unions are demanding that the governor, Kotek, call a special legislative session to tax the rich and fully fund education. The unions also say the money is there, and too much money goes to administration. So what's the story and how is PSUFA responding?
The university has been saying this narrative, the austerity narrative, austerity budgeting and like scarcity narrative that they have is indefinite. Like you can go back and you can look at like many points. I've been working at PSU off and on since 2008. I am an alum. I got my master's degree, my MFA at PSU. So I have been in the university since, you know, for a long time. And this is always the narrative. They'll point at different sorts of, you know, like indicators or whatever. So like right now, part of the narrative is that quote unquote enrollment is down and that's why this is happening, but it's down by a small percentage as a result of COVID. And it just doesn't really add up to the drastic and regressive budgeting tactics that they would like to use. I mean, I also would say that considering their willingness to break the law for union busting outcomes, I would actually not be surprised if this is part of a larger, this restructuring is part of like a larger manipulation of the structure of the university to sort of like break up the growing power of unions on campus. That has been a suspicion that I've had for a long time, although I don't have any like direct evidence of that. But anyway, the austerity budgeting is a narrative that has been continuously brought up for a long time at the university, and really doesn't have much like concrete evidence, as well as like the projections that they're making, which are based off of they're very speculative budgetary projections into the future. So they're like using these like speculative tools to like imagine future budget needs. And their strategy for dealing with possible budget shortfalls, unlike, you know, going and getting more money from Salem, like sort of doing lobbying that brings more money into the education system, public education system. Their idea is to reduce the programs and reduce the offerings, services, faculty members, to reduce the quality of the education. And then somehow by some magic that's supposed to address these small dips in enrollment. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense at all. So when you look at it from that framework, it's kind of like I've been describing this as like the logic that private equity uses when it comes into corporations and then strips them for parts, and then poof, they go out of business because they all of the value proposition. And again, I hate to use the business language about this is a public school, so I don't agree with any of the applying business logic to any of this at all. But if you do look at it from a business standpoint, imagine if you remove a bunch of the value from an institution by like reducing the quality of the thing that you do, which for us is educating people, and then you expect somehow that that's going to write the budget instead of reinvesting in it, making it better, giving people the support they need, and offering students the high quality education that they deserve. Working class people in Oregon who go to our schools, and people from out of state who are working class and come to go to school at PSU, deserve those things. And it's not going to be an attractive school for them to go to in the first place if they keep reducing the quality. So it just like doesn't have any like logical, it doesn't have any logical sense, the plan.
Yeah, and then I'd like to add to this that our position as a union has been very consistent over the past few years, and that is that the university is not allowed to budget to balance their budget on the backs of adjuncts. They owe us fair pay and dignified work conditions, regardless of what the university's budgetary situation is. They can chop from the top, they can redistribute resources, they can generate new resources, as Erica said, in order to pay their faculty members fairly. And I think it's very important when we're thinking about adjuncts in particular in this narrative of the necessity of budget austerity, is to remember how little of PSU's budget we actually are. So in the academic year 2023-2024, which is the last year that I have this data for, adjunct faculty members at PSU were 2.6% of the university's overall expenditures. And we teach over a third of student credit hours. So we're incredibly cheap for the university, and that the idea that they're gonna balance their budget at our expense is incredibly idiotic and unethical and deeply, deeply exploitative.
I would also just add one more thing, which is that their salaries increase at a rate that is wildly higher percentage than any faculty members, either adjunct faculty or full-time faculty.
Right, and you the administrators by theirs, you mean upper-level administrators, yes. Yes, I think it's really important that people know that President Ann Cutt is making $700,000 a year. And adjunct faculty, if they're teaching at their maximum, are going to make less than $30,000 at the university and not have benefits.
Wild. So you all are at this stage where you're going into mediation, and you've been engaged into really new high participation and militant contract campaign. So how are you preparing for a possible strike, and how have you been agitating and educating your members?
I can start with this. I mean, we do strategic planning a year in advance of bargaining. So we actually started planning this quite a long time ago. Obviously that plan has to get revised as things unfold. We start by doing a bargaining survey. We build a high sort of an organizing model, a bargaining team that is doing outreach. We're very communicative with members throughout the process. So we provide frequent bargaining updates. We have open bargaining, meaning that anyone can come and watch. Jamie, you come and watched bargaining many, many times, and many, many other community members and members of campus community, students come and watch. So another thing we're doing is trying to remain in good communication with student organizations, doing things like shared classroom visits with the undergraduate organizers who just formed their first union on campus, unionizing actually the final ununionized portion of workers on campus. So we did shared classroom visits with an adjunct and a student organizer last school year. We have an active Instagram account where we're posting updates, we try to do our best to invite people to public facing events as often as we as often as we can. We have things like rallies. We did, when we won our ULP, we hosted a rally and then sort of a march on the administrative offices and brought them like a giant copy of the unfair labor practice ruling, sort of like unfurled that in their office. So we're trying lots of different kinds of things, straightforward comms, just like regular emails, blog posts that update and summarize the previous bargaining sessions, because many busy adjuncts can't make it to those. So we want to make sure that we're communicating often, both with faculty and students, coordinating with the other labor unions on campus, bringing in community partners. Strike school. We've had lots of strike school sessions. So we're offering adjuncts an opportunity to learn about the history of striking, things like PECPA, which you mentioned, the sort of timeline of bargaining and negotiations that apply to public employees, sort of teaching them and then deputizing those people to go out and communicate with, organize, have one-on-one member conversations with their coworkers, phone banking, classroom visit organizing, home visits, you name it. We're doing lots of different kinds of things. Did I miss anything, Vasiliki? I'm sure I did.
No, I would just say that we're trying to connect with every single member of the bargaining unit, of course, focusing on adjuncts who are contracted in the spring, because if a strike were to happen at this point, it would be in the spring. But we are trying to connect with every single adjunct teaching in spring term. And that's kind of a big, that's a challenge, right? Because adjuncts are part-time workers. They might not teach on campus because they teach remotely. They might be on campus only for a few hours a week. So it's taken lots of creative outreach strategies, some of which Erica has mentioned, and also using kind of longstanding union outreach techniques like home visits, which have actually
t-shirts.
Been very successful. Yeah, t-shirt days and home visits to connect with our adjunct faculty members. And for many adjunct faculty, this has been the only time that they've actually ever spoken to another adjunct faculty member. And that in and of itself is very powerful. And the university has, of course, designed, this faculty group adjuncts to never talk to each other. And so we are... that feels very subversive and important in this moment, is that we are actually talking to each other and bringing more and more adjuncts into contact with each other.
Yeah, actually. So, I mean, that is something that adjuncts are very alienated from the institution, like Vasiliki said, and also many of them teach remotely because they teach an online class. So they actually, some of them never come to campus, and they don't know anyone else that they work with. And so it is really a process of, it's been a huge lift for our union. It's like a very difficult segment of workers to organize, because their working conditions and also their economic conditions are wildly varied. Some people have like a full-time job where they are, more or less financially supported by something else. And they do. I spoke with an adjunct over the weekend on the phone who was a consultant. And I said, why do you teach? And she said, I really care about the students and I want to give back. So it's like, there is this, smaller segment of people who aren't economically, precarious because they have other work. So it's very challenging to communicate with, and sort of, it's not a one size fits all type of bargaining unit. We really have to like do the listening part of the organizing and try to understand, like, why are you doing this work? Why do you care about it? If it's not money, is there something else you care about? And it still needs to always go back to the economics. I mean, it's really important that we continue to say, like, you know, people do need to be paid for their work fairly, whether or not they have, you know, other work elsewhere, that we're not forgetting about the economics. But sometimes the thing that really activates a person might be job security, academic freedom, or even like something else, and trying to sort of like have those organizing conversations and really like hear what kind of adjunct am I talking to, is actually the alienation, the thing that feels the hardest for them, which has happened. I've had that conversation. Someone who lives somewhere else or far away from campus, and they teach online through Zoom, or through literally just like a website Canvas where we put course content, and they never even meet students face to face either. So it is a very alienated group of workers in a lot of ways. One thing that I didn't mention is the strike pledge, which I do want to make sure that we mention. We have circulated a strike pledge. It's still very much in progress. But are we at 35%? Is that right? The latest?
Something like that. I know it's over 30% of adjuncts teaching in the spring have signed the strike pledge.
So what would be the impact of a strike on the college, the administration, the students, the community? How does a strike give you power to achieve your demands?
Well, our goal would be to disrupt university operations by withholding our labor. And of course, this we would only utilize that very powerful tool that we have of withholding our labor if the university wasn't meeting our demands. And we have very specific demands that are specified in the strike pledge around fair pay and job security and academic freedom.
Considering their main narrative about austerity budgeting, sort of the crafting of a narrative of economic downslide or whatever of the university, or this sort of reduced enrollment, that the university is basically is crafting this narrative that because of reduced enrollment, which, you know, it's a small dip in enrollment, that they have to cut all of these programs, and that they also can't give us the contract that we deserve. But many of the things we're asking for are free. They cost the university nothing. And so it's actually just like another indictment that that they don't really care about. They don't care about the workers. They don't care about the students, because some of the things that that we are fighting for actually don't even cost the university anything. And again, like Vasiliki said, we are also really cheap for the university. So this is not a place to save money. It's not going to be a good place for the university to cut. But nonetheless, many of the things we're asking for are simply the ability to grieve academic freedom, impingement on academic freedom. That doesn't cost the university anything. So just basically, I think what it would mean is that it would show members of the campus community that when we organize and we fight together, that we will win these demands.
All right. So you've talked to us a little bit about the timeline. Thinking about a possible strike in the spring. Maybe you could say anything you want our listeners to know about your next steps and how our listeners can support you and keep in touch.
Well, I would say, I mean, mostly we have been, the main call we've been giving is to have people show up for bargaining, because we have open bargaining, and that is very agitational. And so that's been very helpful, and we're appreciative for people to show up for that. We are no longer in bargaining. We're in mediation. We're no longer in open bargaining sessions. We're in mediation, which is closed sessions. So I would say that at this stage, if you are a member of the PSU community, now is an excellent time to reach out to your union and offer to join in the organizing efforts. I think there will be opportunities for members of the public to join us in upcoming events, physical in-person events on campus, where the number of people who show up actually matters quite a bit, makes the university nervous, likelier to settle a fair contract with us. Yeah, I would say also, like, right now there's an excellent object lesson happening in Portland with the PCC staff and faculty who are on strike. that that is what the campus can look like in spring term if the university does not give us a fair contract. And I would just ask that community members, members of other labor unions, and also just people who care about public education can prepare to join us on the picket line. So just knowing that that's coming, that we will be building to a credible threat of strike. And should we go on strike, we really need the community to show up on those picket lines. There will be opportunities to donate to a strike fund and to, you know, bring supplies and people and signs to picket lines at PSU. Vasiliki, what else?
Well, I was just going to say that we'll most certainly be having informational pickets throughout the spring term.
Yes.
As we escalate towards a strike, and you know, the number of people that show up to those do matter. It does matter. So we would love to have members of you know, the labor family and PSU community come and support adjunct faculty and students at PSU, right? Because ultimately this fight for better faculty working conditions is also a fight for student learning conditions.
How do listeners keep in touch?
I think the general public, you can follow us on Instagram is the easiest way. PSU FA Local 3571. If people are interested in emailing, you can email communications@psufa.org. Particularly if you have, if you're wanting to reach our executive council and bargaining team, you can start by emailing me.
So Instagram, PSUFA 3571, email communications@psufa.org. All right. Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Erica Thomas and Vasiliki
Tehuliotis,
co-chairs of the Portland State University Faculty Association. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.